Luke, we think of M. Night Shyamalan as less than, but what if he's more than?
What if the traumas he experienced by having a series of box office flops that got him made fun of actually made him the best of us, capable of unlocking the secrets of the human mind, capable of achieving all that we consider unknown?
Well, he's back in the thriller superhero universe, the Eastrail 177 trilogy.
Yes. You never knew it was a trilogy until now.
16 years later, only diehard fans will catch the foreshadowing.
No, I mean, obviously I knew going in what the final twist of this was. It's doing the Unbreakable framing almost immediately.
It sure is, yeah. And you got the train stuff, and like thematically it's kind of similar.
I really like that the Unbreakable, like, comic book panel framing doesn't start until they get kidnapped. Like, that opening scene isn't shot like that, and then as soon as they're in the bunker, all of a sudden it is.
How'd you feel about this flick?
Well, I was gonna say I'm torn on it, but I suppose you could say I'm split on it.
I too am split on it, yes.
Yeah. I think it is a very effective, very well-directed thriller. And I'm not... Boy, I don't know about the things they decided, the things M. Night Shyamalan decided to make a thriller about, you know?
Luke, my friend, our opinions are almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
That Shyamalan guy, he can direct a flick. Visually, a fine film. Very well performed. Scripts?
Yes.
Yeah, kind of sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'll say very well performed with one very notable exception to me, which is a small role, but the woman at the diner that sets up the Unbreakable twist just totally beefs that line, where she's like, well, this reminds me of a time that a different movie happened. What was that one called? And Bruce Willis goes, it was called Unbreakable.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I don't know why that woman in particular, it's just like the most like community theater line reading. But like the principal actors, James McAvoy, Anya Taylor-Joy, doing good work.
Yes, I would say that those two characters are very well performed, and they're given some meat to chew on.
Yeah, I don't know the names of the actors that play the other two girls, but I think they do a good job too.
I wish that Claire and Marcia had more going on.
I also wish they had more going on. I kind of wish this was... Okay. The, like, punchline of this movie... Well, I don't want to say the punchline of this movie, because that's maybe not fair. The Beast's ideology is that traumatized people are special and good.
Yeah.
And, like, anyone who's not traumatized is just a fucking NPC beta cuck.
Yeah.
And it's okay to murder them, because they don't matter. It's that fucking I think you should leave sketch of like, oh yeah, we hit someone on the way here, but don't worry, they like didn't matter.
Yep, once again, the villain is correct.
Yeah, that's the thing. They kind of get validated with how this goes. I wanted it to be, you know, Anya Taylor-Joy bridging the gap between those two other girls as they all work together to escape. And that's not what happens.
They're impure because they haven't experienced true suffering.
They're asleep. But also, they experience true suffering from the beginning of the film onward.
Yeah, but they don't think of themselves as victims.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because she's like, this is victim mentality. We need to not think that way. But like, his whole thing, like, he disproves his own point by traumatizing them. Why doesn't that count?
Well, they were never traumatized before.
Uh-huh. But they are now. Like, he's like, oh, you're asleep. Like, no, under your logic, you woke them up.
That's like saying, you know, you want, like, a cake that hasn't been cut into. Then once you cut into it, you're not like, oh, I can't eat this anymore.
No, it's not like that, because he likes cut-up cakes. He wants cut-up cakes in the world. Oh, this cake sucks. It's not cut up. I'm gonna cut it.
No, but he wants to eat the pure cake, the impure cakes, which are pure cakes.
Does he want to eat them, or does he want to, like, get rid of them?
He wants to eat them.
I know he does eat them, but I thought that was just the means by which he gets rid of people he considers undesirable.
No, he's the Beast. He eats.
Sure. Right, he's the amalgamation of the personalities of all the animals in the zoo.
Yeah, I mean, the tiger eat the gazelle, or whoever tigers eat.
Tigers hate gazelles because they're impure.
I think that's what Bambi's about. Have you ever seen the movie Chiron's Bell?
Oh, is that the one about the sheep?
Yeah, it's about the little sheep.
I think I saw that when I was, like, a little kid, and I don't, like, I kinda remember it, but not really.
It was a Sanrio Disney co-production. It's about a little sheep whose mom gets killed by a wolf.
Right.
So then he grows up to be, like, all fucked up like Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
And he ends up becoming a wolf.
Yes, yeah.
And it's all about the tragic cycle of violence.
Sure.
But what if he was a good guy and correct about the world?
Yeah, that is... So I have not seen Glass. I have heard people talk about Glass in a way that maybe continues the thoughts of this movie, in a way that maybe makes them a little more palatable, but this movie on its own is a little like, this is where you went, huh?
I have heard of Glass as a refinement of Lady in the Water.
I could also see that argument, sure.
Have you seen that one?
I saw it when I was like a teenager.
I saw that one recently, let me tell you. Might be one of Shyamalan's best flicks.
I struggle to believe you.
What, because he casts himself as the guy who's going to save the world by being an awesome writer?
I mean, that's like one part, sure.
That's too arrogant?
I think it feels a little like self-inserty, especially like if when you map that to like the point he's at in his career where, you know, he made like a couple movies people fucking loved that were huge blockbusters and then sort of lost it. He's like, no, it's everyone else who's wrong. I am the greatest writer who ever lived.
But do you like The Village?
I have not seen The Village.
Okay. But I mean, if you saw The Village and you're like, oh, this movie rules, and then you've read some contemporary scathing reviews, you'd be like, well, maybe he has a point.
I think even if I agreed with him that he was getting his ass handed to him unfairly, I still think that feels a bit like a temper tantrum move.
But when you're writing something, don't you sometimes have to hype yourself up a little bit just to put the pen to paper?
But he didn't hype himself up. He hyped himself up to the audience. Like, by the way, fuck all of you, I'm great.
He didn't say fuck the audience. He said fuck the critic character I made up.
Right,
that's fuck just... this straw man character.
Right, yeah. Fucking...
He invited the audience to appreciate the beauty of a community coming together by slotting into storytelling roles, just like Unbreakable.
I remember that movie being very corny in a way that I was just kind of like, whatever, dude. And I get, you know, it's been maybe 20 years since I saw it, so I feel like I'm not on equal footing with you here talking about it. But, you know.
It is very corny, parentheses good.
I remember it being corny, parentheses bad. Is the lady in the water's name Snarf?
No, Snarf is the dog name. Her name is Story.
I thought the dogs were Scrunts.
Oh, right. Snarf is another word for nymph.
Right, she is a Snarf.
Yes, her name is Story, however.
Right.
Because the story is in danger, Luke. You need to save the story.
From the Scrunts.
Yes. The Scrunts are the Netflix producers in your head.
Maybe I will try to find time to watch Lady in the Water and give a renewed opinion about it.
Yeah, but right now we're talking about Split, a movie that's not as good.
I watched this movie last night. We tried to watch it when you came down here for our wedding. We got like 10 minutes into it and then had to turn it off because, you know, a wedding was happening.
Yeah.
I think the first like 20 to 30 minutes of this movie, pretty much perfect.
Yeah.
The therapist scenes are in there. The therapist scenes, I think, are the roughest part of this movie.
Would you believe that he cut out a lot of extra scenes for her?
I kind of would believe that. Yeah. That was the right call. He should have kept cutting.
I agree. He should have kept cutting. I don't really understand. She gets a lot of screen time, and yet she's still, like, not a character.
Well, I think she's there for the exposition of, like, this is... You know, she is the one really pushing the idea that dissociative identity disorder is not merely a psychological condition, but also, you know, you get superpowers out of it.
Yeah.
What if everybody from Sense8 was in one body? That's actually what DID is.
And in the media interviews for this film, Shyamalan explained that, you know, when I tell these kinds of stories, I like to do, like, slight exaggerations from the truth. Everybody sure. knows, like, the placebo effect, right? Everyone accepts that?
Right.
Well, if you go to one step further, which is something that that he believes, but is not fully accepted, which is that people with DID can get or not have diabetes based on their ulcer.
Like, I can certainly believe that there is some psychosomatic stuff where, like, you know, an ulcer might have a... listen, this is just going to be a movie where we have to talk about, like, people with multiple personalities. I'm not plural, and I'm going to do my best to, like, not say stupid shit, but I might, so I apologize in advance. But no, like, I can imagine, like, the thing with, just looking at this movie, like, Hedwig not being as strong as Dennis, I can imagine, like, a psychosomatic thing where he's just not using his full strength when he's Hedwig, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That makes sense to me. I would even buy that, like, he doesn't have a name other than the Horde, right? There's not, like, a less judgy name, because the Horde is only three of them.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a name for the full collection of people.
It's Kevin Wendell Crumb.
Sure, I guess so, yeah. Like, I could even believe that, like, Kevin Wendell Crumb is diabetic, but from his perception, that diabetes only manifests when he is that one personality. And, like, you know, that's the only one that is taking the insulin shot. He has more insulin in him no matter what body he's in because he took an injection. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So he better be diabetic because I think that's something you shouldn't do. I don't think you should have an insulin injection in you if you're not diabetic.
He might accidentally go the other way.
Right, right. So I think, you know, I can buy that. The idea that literally his cholesterol would go up and down depending on which personality he currently has. That's silly.
And then the one step further Shyamalan took outside the bounds of reality is what right. if you got superpowers?
What if one of your personalities just fully had superpowers and could scramble around on walls and ceilings like a spider?
They got spiders at the zoo? I guess sometimes they do.
Yeah, they got like an insect house, and I know spiders ain't insects, but you know, I'm sure they got spiders sometimes.
Yeah, not crabs.
Yeah.
It's a spider of the sea.
That's true, yeah.
The protagonist of our film is Casey Cook.
Yes.
She's a real sad sack. She's sitting at the birthday party, not talking to anyone, looking out the window, looking so sad, just like David Dunn.
Why is this teen girl so, like, self-isolating and does a bunch of self-destructive behavior? That's never an indicator of anything bad going on. But she must just be a weird freak.
Well, that's what other people who have never experienced trauma would think.
Yeah. Like, I think the trauma thing, there is something you could dig into with it, right? That, like, she can relate to Kevin more than other people and vice versa because they have, like, you know, not shared trauma, but they both, like, understand, like, hey, sometimes life is really bad and it fucks you up in ways that make it so that other people can't relate to you. But just the way the movie goes about that is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, she is, like, at a birthday party. Her parents aren't showing up to pick her up, so the birthday girl who is that Marcia? Or no, Marcia's her friend.
Claire is the birthday girl.
Claire's the birthday girl. Her dad seems very nice. He's just a nice man. He's like, okay, well, we're not ditching her. If her parents aren't showing up, I guess I'll just give her a ride. Even though, like, you don't really know her and don't really like her and just invited her to be nice. And then you just have this sequence where, like, the girls all get into the car while he's loading up the trunk, and you have, like, a POV shot of someone walking up to him, and then her dad doesn't get into the car, James McAvoy does. Hold on.
That's a different person, but they can't tell because they're too busy looking at their damn phones.
Right. Anya Taylor-Joy notices, but she kind of just has a freeze response to the whole thing.
She is trying to very slowly open the car door without him noticing, but... the damn safety features on these new cars. Door beeps when it's open.
Yeah, it beeps when it's open, and I'm yelling at my screen, like, get out of there, just run, you got the door open, go! But, you know, again, people freeze up, I get it. He seems like he's got, like, a little spray can of knockout gas that he hits the other girls with. It seems like he's just gonna let her stay awake if she doesn't try to get away.
Yes.
Because not until he hears the thing that he goes for, you know?
Because he's like an assassin, he is only here for his targets. He must stay his blade from the flesh of an innocent.
Oh, I guess that's true. He's technically not here to kidnap her.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what his plan was, but...
Yeah, why not just throw her out of the car?
Maybe he's thinking about it.
Yeah. I thought he was just like, you're clearly chill, and you're just gonna, like, sit quietly while we go back. You can stay awake, that's fine. We can talk on the way. Oh, you're gonna try to escape? Well, okay, well, I gotta knock you out then, sorry.
Yeah, I think as he's wiping down the wheel, he's practicing a speech in his head.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Vanya Taylor-Joy tried to open the door, which means she's gotta come too.
Yep, yep. And then, yeah, like, the title sequence is just, like, the credits intercut with, like, quick shots of them getting, like, dragged down into this facility. They do a good job, like, the whole movie, you're like, what the fuck is this place? It's just this creepy labyrinth of hallways and, like, maintenance shafts. And then, oh, the, like, one of the twists of the ending is that they're underneath the Philadelphia Zoo the whole time.
Yeah, it's really good how at first it just seems like a basement, but then just keeps going.
Yeah, yeah. This whole place kind of feels like an adventure game setup to me.
Absolutely.
I want to play like 999, but I'm Casey trying to get out of here.
The production design is very good, where there's lots of little, like, clues to all 24 personalities.
Oh, yeah, I didn't, like, study it that closely.
Yeah, like, the clothes rack, there's, like, way more coats than one person would have up.
Oh, sure, yeah, or, like, the toothbrushes.
Yeah, there's lots of little post-it notes everywhere.
So, when he gets up in the morning, does he just brush his teeth 24 times?
I guess it depends who's up that morning.
I guess each one just wants their own toothbrush, and, like, yeah, they don't want to share.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess. 24 is a high number of personalities to give this guy.
He seems to have a high maintenance life.
Especially when, like, only, like, maybe, what, 4 or 5 of them actually matter to the plot, and maybe 3 more show up at all?
Yeah, and only through, mostly just through the video logs.
Right, right, or, like, there's that one sequence at the very end where he's, like, shifting through a bunch of them in rapid succession. But, like, why give him so many? That just seems like a lot.
Well, he's got a lot going on.
He does have a lot going on.
He wants to emphasize that the Horde is only a small part of this complex man.
Right, right. Again, I think, like, as far as, like, filmmaking goes, the thriller element of it, I really love all this early stuff where he just comes in, like, unfolds a chair, wipes it down to sit down, and, like, just decides which one he wants to, you know, have his way with first.
Yes, he picks Marcia.
Yeah.
And then Casey goes up to her and says, piss yourself.
There is an incredible POV shot that just pulls in on Anya Taylor-Joy as she, like, grabs the camera and says, pee on yourself. And that needs to just be, like, a reaction gif all over the internet as far as I'm concerned. Anytime someone says something stupid, Anya Taylor-Joy should be telling them to pee on themselves.
Even though in the film it's sort of a tragic indicator that maybe she's gone through a similar experience.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's all those reaction gifs are out of context.
Yeah.
Like, the Michael Scott slamming the table and saying thank you is from a bit where the whole joke is that the thing he's, like, twisting someone's words to make it sound like they're agreeing with a stupid point he made. But, you know, people just use it as, oh, thank you for agreeing with my good point I made.
Or, Harry eating the pie.
Yeah, true, true.
Maybe the pie is not really that good. It's more just about how much he's owned his enemy, Peter Parker.
Right, he's enjoying the schadenfreude more than the pie.
Yeah.
But yeah, she tells Marcia to pee on herself because she's immediately already picked up on the fact that Dennis, who's this personality, has, like, you know, they say OCD later, but, you know, he's a germaphobe. So she's trying to protect Marcia from whatever he's going to do. And yeah, she tells her to pee on herself, and she does, and it works.
He is both a germaphobe and a pedophile.
Yes.
He's got quite a collection of characteristics.
Yeah, they kind of, like, his germophobia and, like, OCD is almost like an excuse for his pedophilia, because it's an excuse to make them keep taking their clothes off because they're dirty.
Right.
And they don't really get, like, they explain where the, like, OCD comes from, because Kevin's mom was abusive about keeping the house, like, spotless, and that's how Dennis got, like, formed. They don't really explain why Dennis also likes to watch teenage girls dance naked.
Well, I guess, you know, people have more than just one thing to them, I guess.
No, sure, hey, Dennis can be a multifaceted individual. They just, you know, they're so like, oh, this aspect of this personality comes from this traumatic event, and this one comes from that. They don't really ever explain where the pedophilia comes from.
No.
That one's just there.
But it cuts straight from this horrific scene to a seemingly innocuous scene where a young Casey's having dinner with her uncle and father.
Yeah, and her uncle is just, like, telling this hunting story that his dad's kind of teasing him about because clearly he's got buck fever.
He's got buck fever?
Yeah, I guess the idea is that he's more worried of, like, he's being stupid because he wants, like, the big trophy, you know, buck instead of, like, being a good hunter.
Oh.
Yeah. Because, like, they make a joke about, like, how big was its rack? He's like, oh, it was huge. And then the dad turns to little Casey. He's like, are you supposed to be looking at the deer's head when you're hunting? No. Okay, then how come your uncle knows how big its rack was? And I thought the idea at this point was like, oh, she's, like, gone hunting with her dad her whole life. She has, like, survivalist skills. That's how she's getting out of here. But that's, at most, only part of it.
No, her uncle's bad news.
Her uncle's a bad, bad man. We should probably, this is the first time I feel like we need to throw, like, content warnings on an episode of this show.
Yeah, child sexual assault is an element of the film.
And then it cuts from there to our first scene with the therapist. You know, there's, like, a news story about the girls being missing, and she's got an email from Kevin saying that they need to talk.
I need to see you urgent, sent in the middle of the night as this suspicious news story is playing.
You know, I think, was it Jade that sent the emails?
It was Barry. It was under Barry's name, at least.
It's under Barry's name, but yeah, I think Jade is the one who actually, like, sent it. Because yeah. I think at the end, she's like, oh, did she ever get my emails? I think, listen, I get it. I feel like in this kind of situation, you gotta sign those emails, Jade.
Yeah, I guess she only has a second.
I guess she only has a second, but, you know, even toss a J on the end, you know?
That would help. It's just one of Shyamalan's sloppy plot holes.
Yeah, this is not me like, oh, bad writing. It's, you know, this is the kind of, every horror movie has that kind of thing, you know?
Right.
But, you know, just saying, Jade could have saved everyone a lot of grief.
Back in the hell basement, Claire is talking about how she's taken some karate classes at the mall.
She took 6 months of kendo, so I think she can take this guy.
I've watched a few episodes of SpongeBob where they do karate.
Right. Right. Her plan, like, whenever the guy gets back, all three of them should just jump him at the same time. Which honestly would probably be my instinct too, but Casey is like, no, no, no. He's like, I saw how easily he picked each of us up. He is easily strong enough to take all three of us at the same time. One punch would knock us out. That's stupid. That's not a good plan. And they all, like, Marcia and Claire kind of blame her for, like, just, like, giving up. And she's not giving up. They don't get it. She's just waiting. She's trying to pick her spot.
She's patiently observing.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to be victims.
Right. And then we get, yeah, more flashback stuff. Claire's out hunting with her dad as a little kid, just getting, like, a whole lesson on how to shoot deer. And, you know, the uncle's there. And, you know, that plot sort of just gets slow walked throughout this whole, like, early part of the movie.
Even though it's kind of immediately obvious what the deal is.
I'll admit I didn't really get what the deal was until, like, they reveal it.
Okay, I guess it's not that obvious. So Barry shows up to his appointment. He is a fashion designer. He's a very affable fellow, very sociable.
Yeah. I would say, you know, regardless, I think you can criticize, you know, this movie's treatment of, like, you know, DID or plurality or whatever term you want to use all day long. I do think James McAvoy does a very good job of embodying lots of different characters.
James McAvoy, he's a better actor than those X-Men movies would have you believe.
This might be the first time I've ever seen James McAvoy in a movie.
In a real movie?
Because I have not seen any of the X-Men movies.
Dang, this kid's going somewhere.
Yeah. It's both him and, like, the wardrobing. I think they do a really good job. Like, this feels like a different guy from Dennis.
Absolutely.
Even though actually it is Dennis pretending to be Barry.
Exactly. That's why he's always fidgeting with stuff around the office.
Right, he can't help but, like, try to tidy up a little bit even while he's pretending to be Barry. Because the idea here is that he is here to assure the doctor that, you know, he was feeling bad and he sent that email, but, you know, he's feeling better now. You don't need to worry about it or ask any questions about why I sent it.
He just keeps deflecting all her questions and saying everything's fine.
Everything's fine and regular. I'm just normal. I like the bit where, you know, he asks her, this is another way Dennis is kind of tipping his hand, is he's asking her personal questions that Barry would already know the answers to. Like, how old are you? You know, do you live with anybody? But I like the bit where she's like, no, I live alone. You know that. You know, I've always lived alone. And he just has a moment of like, that seems so lonely. Because, you know, to him, even when he's alone, he's not alone.
But her patients are her family. She's dedicated her life to them.
Yeah. I just like the idea, like, you know, James McAvoy is the villain in this movie. And that's just, and, you know, we spend the vast majority of the time with the villainous, you know, personalities that he has. But I do like that one little line of, like, establishing, like, this is not, like, a strictly bad thing that he, like, that his mind works this way. Like, he sees advantages in it for himself.
Yeah, 7/8 of him is good.
Right. And, like, he feels like he is constantly, you know, he's got, he carries his family around with him in his head.
Yeah. At this point, they have not specified the disorder that they're talking about. It's still supposed to be a twist, even though it's, like, the main premise of the film.
It's the main premise of the film, and, you know, it's not going to be too much longer before they say it, and I think even just seeing Barry here compared to Dennis earlier, you kind of get it already.
Yeah.
the doctor goes and, like, hangs out with one of her neighbors who's so pissed at the way people play Wheel of Fortune.
I did not understand this scene.
I think the point of this scene is that this lady is, you know, she's one of the asleep people. She doesn't understand anything real. She just cares about Wheel of Fortune and buying something off an infomercial. And she thinks the traumatized people are crazy and doesn't like them.
But the doctor says, what if actually they're better than us?
Which is that's the first point where I was watching this. I was like, uh-oh. Uh-oh, huh? Listen, I already know that you're gonna be kind of, like, gross and exploitative about, like, multiple personalities in this movie. That's the premise I'm signing up for when I start Split, I get it. But you're going that far with it, huh? You're going full on, like, you know, sure, Daredevil is blind, but actually that means he can perceive more than anybody. That means that actually he can, like, create perfect sonograms out of the rain.
How common is this in superhero stories?
You know, it's not uncommon, I think. I don't think this really plays like a superhero story, though.
You don't think so?
Not really. It plays like a weird thriller. The kind of superhero story this feels like is like, wow, you know, one time they did this, like, limited run where somebody gets, you know, kidnapped by the Riddler and it's all from the victim's perspective. And it's like, it's cool because it doesn't read like a superhero story. You know, that kind of thing. But that means it doesn't read like a superhero story until Mr. Unbreakable shows up at the end.
Right.
But yeah, the girls are all, like, watching through a crack in the door, and they think there's multiple people out there because they see, you know, someone in a skirt and high heels, and they're having a conversation with the person that kidnapped them.
And the person that comes to the door is Patricia, who is a nice British lady.
Yeah, seems at first maybe like a nice personality, but she's just a little less violent than Dennis. She's still a bastard. And it's a real shocking twist when, you know, those womanly heels are actually being worn by James McAvoy.
Yes. That's how you know he's really sick and twisted.
He's a real sick freak because he, you know, one of his personalities is a woman.
But Casey kind of seems to clock what's going on. She understands.
Yeah, or at least she's starting to put it together. Yeah, whereas the other two are just like, what the fuck? This makes no sense.
They just, you know, they're sheltered. They just don't know about the world.
Yeah. We get more time with the doctor where she's, like, talking to a colleague who's like, she's really defending her position that actually people with dissociative identity disorder, specifically, they use DID as a phrase a lot in this movie. I think maybe they're actually superheroes. And this guy's like, that's stupid. And I respect you, and yet I think you're also stupid, and I wish you'd stop being so stupid.
One of her pieces of evidence for this theory is apparently a dog.
I mean, I get where she's coming from, that she's got, like, video of, like, a dog that behaves differently around one personality versus another. Like, sure, dogs are intuitive or whatever, but, you know.
But she is correct, but she's maybe not the best at argumentation.
Right. And again, the thing she's correct about is goofy, so it's silly that she's correct, and the movie might be better without that element of it.
Dennis comes back in with a bucket and walks into the bathroom, which has not been used.
No, Claire uses it at one point.
Oh, that's true. I guess she didn't wipe off her piss that well.
Yeah, right.
And he lectures the girls about keeping the area neat and clean at all times.
Yes. And he also apologizes for trying to sexually assault Marcia earlier. You know, that's not appropriate since they're here as sacred food. So don't worry, I'm not going to rape you, I'm just going to murder you.
Well, he was only going to watch them dance.
Sure. I mean, whatever he needs to tell himself. We get, like, notes just sprawled out on a table, and we get our first sign of the Beast, just a crayon drawing of a big scary monster.
It's a mysterious, villainous creature.
Yeah. The girls, like, go to sleep, and when they wake up, James McAvoy is Hedwig, who is a personality who's a 9-year-old boy.
And he's just sitting there with the door open.
Yep. I like how much Hedwig uses the word etc.
It's so charming because he's like, he's not a dumb kid. He's like kind of a precocious kid.
Right, he's smart for a 9-year-old, but 9-year-olds are still kind of dumb.
Yeah.
It's like, they're gonna yell at me, etc.
It's very charming.
Yeah, and Casey kind of immediately clocks, wait a second. If he really is like a 9-year-old boy right now, we're teen girls. We're great at manipulating 9-year-old boys.
He has revealed his weakness.
Yeah. I forget if this is where this all gets explained, but this is also Hedwig, for whatever reason. They talk about the light, and like, I think they say later, like, it's kind of like a spotlight in his mind that like the dominant personality at any moment like steps into. And normally Barry is in full control of like the collective and can like, you know, he has the light, but he can hand it off at will. But for whatever reason, Hedwig is capable of stealing it. And Patricia and Dennis have kind of like coaxed him into partnering up with them and letting them have the light so that they can free the Beast.
They're all part of some kind of Daffy religion.
Yeah, Hedwig, Patricia, and Dennis are all part of a religion around the Beast. They call themselves the Horde. Which, three people, that ain't a horde. You need more people on board before you can start using that one, I think.
Is four people enough?
Oh boy, when does a set of, like, when do stray strands of hay become a haystack?
We're talking about a main supervillain and three lieutenants. Is that a horde?
I don't think that's a horde. A horde to me sounds like dozens, you know?
Maybe they're hoping they can convert others.
I think they think once the Beast is out, all the other personalities will, like, get on board with them.
Yes, the Beast will finally prove to the world that they're special.
Right, because that's their other thing. They're very concerned, like, people don't even believe we really exist, you know, and we want to prove it. And you know what'll prove it is if we become a monster man.
But what if that didn't prove it? Wouldn't that be tragic?
Wouldn't that be tragic if then he just has to go to, like, a psych ward? And have a lady who's part of a different cult tell him that he's regular, actually. Everything I know about Glass makes it sound like a movie I'm going to like a lot.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm excited to actually watch it. But yeah, Casey tries to kind of like bring Hedwig in with them, you know, convince him that like, hey, we're like cool teen girls. We're kind of like your babysitters. We can be like, you know, friends, but you got to help us get out of here.
He doesn't buy it. He knows that he's being tricked.
You know, she tries to convince him that like Patricia and Dennis are actually not his friends. They're trying to like, you know, they're gonna use him if they, you know, for whatever they're doing. You know, she's kind of improvising because she doesn't know the plot yet.
Meanwhile, Claire starts trying to dig through the ceiling with her shoes because there's a grate up there.
Yeah, like the room isn't like drywalled up, but it's all fresh drywall, and something Hedwig said made them think there might be something behind the drywall. And yeah, she finds a big grate up there. And Marcia and Casey have to, like, bar the door while she tries to climb up through the ceiling. And because he's Hedwig, you know, he's as weak as a little boy, so they can hold him off. But then all of a sudden he pushes the door open. Like, he walks away and then comes back in a different outfit, and now he's Dennis.
Uh-oh.
I like how this movie uses cuts to kind of glide over, like, this guy spends a lot of time changing.
Right. He must have gotten pretty good at it.
Yeah. Frankly, Dennis, I feel like this is an emergency situation. Maybe you just need to wear Hedwig's clothes to get this under control, man.
Well, then he would get Hedwig's clothes dirty.
That's true.
You can't
be
mean to children. That reveals something about your character.
Right. That's what he tells him.
But Claire does make it into the vents.
She makes it into the vents and is, like, crawling around trying to escape. She finds a locker room that has, like, the lockers of each of the personalities. And she tries to hide in it, but Dennis finds her. And her sweater's ruined. It's dirty. She needs to take it off now. And then he just, like, looks her up and down because she's not wearing anything but a bra. And he's like, I'm trying to be good. I'm trying to be good. And because she tried to escape, now she doesn't get to hang out with the other girls. She gets locked in a different room.
Yeah.
It's a shame just how she's not traumatized at all, and that makes her a less of a person.
It also makes her good eating.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, when you're hunting a deer, you don't want to get him too stressed out, you know?
Yeah, I would say you've already gotten the deer too stressed out at this point.
What's his first hunt?
Like, if the point was to collect innocent, untraumatized people for the beast to eat, I think they've already blown it.
Yeah, we'll do better next time.
They needed these girls here, like, right before the beast came out.
Yeah. Dr. Karen is giving a Skype conference call about how people can have superpowers with different personalities.
Right, you know, and right, this is where we get, like, one personality can have high cholesterol and one can have low cholesterol. Or, like, you know, one can be an expert in this field and one can be an expert in a different field. Or one can be, like, a power lifter, even though the others are weak.
One could be a Russian power lifter, even.
Right.
Now, could this be the doorway to further human evolution, Luke?
Have they unlocked the full potential of the brain?
Have you ever seen Wedding Crashers?
I saw it a long time ago, yeah. Probably around the time I saw Lady in the Water.
Owen Wilson has a line in that movie which has really stuck with me, which is like, you know, some people say we only use 10% of our brains, but I think we only use 10% of our hearts.
Right, I do remember that line.
That's a good line.
Yeah. It's not bad.
So Dennis sent Karen another urgent email in the middle of the night, and this time, she's not buying it.
Right, he's like, no, it's just I was feeling weird, but now I'm fine. And she's like, it's two nights in a row, man. Come on.
I developed a sense where I know who I'm talking to, and I don't think you're Barry.
Right, and he makes a point of, like, smearing a chocolate on his collar just to prove that he doesn't have OCD. Because she does think that he's Dennis, even though she's never met Dennis.
And Dennis is not performing very well at this point. He is sort of just bald-facedly lying.
Yeah. She gets M. Night Shyamalan to pull up security footage for him.
She's a real dick to him.
Yeah, I got the impression that they're like old buds and they razz each other a lot, but she really cuts into this guy.
Now, what does it mean that Shyamalan cast himself and wrote himself as a character who is supposed to be kind of apparently despicable for no reason?
I think it means he remembers what happened with Lady in the Water and wants to keep doing cameos in his movies, but doesn't want to get roasted again.
Yeah, he does have a tendency to cast himself as a suspicious character.
That's true, because he's the drug guy in Unbreakable.
I think this is the same guy.
It could be the same character. You're not wrong.
It's 16 years later. He got a job.
Yeah, it could be. I'll say, he's looking good.
Yeah. He does look good.
He really doesn't look like he's aged a day since Unbreakable.
He's got a better haircut.
He is a much better haircut. But, they watch the security footage outside, and they see that Kevin walks through a pile of trash, and it's like, well, that's weird. I guess he doesn't care about garbage. And she's like, no, you dumb idiot. Anybody would walk around a pile of trash. That was, like, performative. He's trying to make a point of how little he cares about it.
Is Shyamalan's role as Jay supposed to be like, he's the exploitative director of the movie?
I don't really think it's anything deep. I think he just has fun casting himself in cameo roles, and that was like a minor role for him to jump into. Because there's not that many roles in this movie.
I guess so.
Like, who else would he cameo as here?
I don't know. I guess I just don't understand why she's such a dick to him.
Like, I guess if he cast Claire as someone that could look like his daughter, he could have been the dad at the start.
Yeah.
That's about it. But yeah, then we get more... we get Marcia trying desperately to get Casey to talk to her and, like, help her form a plan. And I'll say, Casey is right that these girls clearly don't have a good idea about, like, how to handle this situation. They don't know what they're doing and their ideas are just gonna make things worse. She could communicate a little more.
how can you communicate to someone who doesn't speak your language?
I guess that's true. Just seems like it might be time, Claire, you know, and again, like, hey, we're about to get, like, more stuff about why Casey is the way she is. But, you know, if she stepped up and actually told them, like, what she's thinking and, like, what her strategy is, I think they would be calmer and more willing to work with her.
If she just smiled and gave them a Vegemite sandwich?
What?
You know that song?
Not offhand.
I said, do you speak of my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich.
I guess I don't know.
From a land down under?
I don't know.
A land down under. It's a good song.
I got nothing.
It's a good one. Patricia has made everybody mayonnaise and paprika sandwiches.
Okay. Oh, it's good. It's got paprika in it.
She gives like a little tongue click at that. Like, oh, she's being a little saucy with paprika in it.
Paprika, the like zestiest spice.
Have you ever had one of these?
A mayonnaise and paprika sandwich?
Uh-huh.
No, I can't say as I have.
I made one after I watched the film, and you know what? It's not very good.
I'll bet not. Seems bland. Did you see that trend on TikTok like a few months back of people trying to say that paprika doesn't taste like anything?
Sounds like they have the 2019 novel coronavirus.
I mean, yeah. Like, no, paprika is like a fake spice. Don't even bother putting in anything. It doesn't have a flavor. Like, it has a flavor.
You can smell it.
Yeah, it's an aromatic.
Smoked paprika is even better.
Yeah. But yeah, Patricia, like, brushes out Casey's hair, puts flowers in their hair. At this point, Dennis has pulled the same trick with both of them. Right, it's because they got dust on them from the ceiling. So he made Marcia take off her pants and made Casey take off her shirt. But Casey wears, like, four shirts at all times, so she's still dressed.
It really bothers me that Patricia cut these sandwiches down the middle instead of diagonally.
Well, I think it's because she's got Dennis hanging around with her at the same time, and Dennis has OCD, because she's like, I'll make you another sandwich, and she cuts it, but the two sides aren't perfectly equal, and he makes her throw it away.
I guess that's why they gotta be mayonnaise and paprika, because she's gotta make them like five times to get them perfect.
I think they've gotta be mayonnaise and paprika because Patricia's British and doesn't know what good things taste like.
Yeah, fuck England. James McAvoy is Scottish, so he'd agree with me, probably.
Right, yeah. There you go. But they are in, like, you know, the kitchen, and Marcia can see, you know, there's another door out of here. It's got a little square window, so you can get some of those unbreakable framing shots of, like, you know, looking at this scene through the window. And she kind of silently stands up and grabs her chair to beat Patricia with it, and Anya Taylor-Joy's like, no, what are you doing? Stop it. I'm gonna say, I'm on Marcia's side on this one.
Yeah, if this was...
If you're sitting back and waiting for the time to act, this is the time to act.
Yes, this is the part of the Hitman cutscene where you move.
Like, I would say Marcia's only mistake is that she hits Patricia once and runs. You just gotta keep hitting her until she doesn't get up.
Yeah, but maybe she's worried that she'll activate Dennis.
Right. I think if you clock her on the head and have her on the ground, I understand Dennis is very strong. I don't think he's strong enough to overcome that disadvantage.
But Patricia catches up to her and puts a knife very close to her breathing belly.
Yes. It's very, like, tense and, like, it's you know, again, movie's got good, like, suspense filmmaking in it.
And Patricia explains that the reason why she caught her is that she's always been asleep. You never had the chance.
Well, also before that, like, you know, Casey kind of tries to cover her escape, but Patricia just, like, sort of brandishes the knife and tells her to go back to the room, and Casey just does as she's told, which I feel like that's sort of more foreshadowing, like, yeah, Casey does understand the situation better, but also, again, she has her own trauma, and she is just inclined to do as she's told.
She kind of postures as if she has a plan, but her plan is kind of just to suffer through it.
Kinda, yeah, which is, you know, again, understandable, because that's how she deals with her uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, that knife is just, like, it is as in her as it could be without drawing blood. Like, if it wasn't a prop knife, it would be drawing blood.
Yes. If it wasn't dulled from all the sandwich cutting. Then why is it? I guess that must be a different knife if it's so clean.
Oh, sure, right. And yeah, Dennis, meanwhile, makes... I like the filmmaking. It feels like Patricia is in one room with Marcia while Dennis is in a different room with Casey.
Yes.
Even though, obviously, those scenes must just happen one after the other.
And they're both, like, facing different directions in each one.
Right, right. But yeah, Dennis makes Casey take another shirt off because she's got crumbs on this one now. But, you know, she still has more shirts. I wonder why she wears so many shirts, almost like she is, very protective of her body for some reason.
Yeah, and she's got scars to hide.
Yeah, she wakes up and, Hedwig is spooning her.
And she immediately goes into manipulating Hedwig mode.
Right, and this is another point where, again, at this point you know that Hedwig is physically, weak enough that you can overpower him. Hedwig, you know, nice kid. You gotta beat the child, I'm sorry. You need to simply hit him and run.
Luke.
She is a prisoner in a basement that's going to get murdered. I'm sorry.
She's specced into charisma.
She is specced into charisma, that's true. Because, yeah, Hedwig mentions offhand that he likes to listen to music in his bedroom. He's got a CD player up by his window. And, she's like, wait, window? Oh, what if you took me into your room to listen to music?
He loves Kanye. He loves his man, Kanye.
His man, Kanye.
This character reminds me a lot of the boy from The Visit, who is also a white boy rapper.
Oh, okay. I have not seen The Visit, only because I know that there is a sequence in it where, the boy gets hit with, a shit-filled diaper, and I can't do it.
That's fair.
Listen. Nobody likes shit. Well, most people don't like shit. I am, full on, shit phobic.
Yeah.
I, have to psych myself up to clean up after a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So that's... Hearing that that's in that movie, I'm just okay, well, there's other movies in this world I can watch.
Yeah, that movie's not his best.
That's kind of the one that people thought, this is kind of the comeback, though, I thought.
Yes, that was considered his comeback after Earth.
I remember the thing, you know, his line about The Happening was well, I'm just trying to make a modern B movie. And the line I have heard is well, The Visit actually feels like that.
Like a B movie?
That was his argument. Yeah, oh, people are taking The Happening too seriously. It's supposed to be a B movie, you know, Them or The Blob or something. You should be watching it in that mindset.
I would say The Visit feels like an independent horror film.
Well, right. I mean, that's what it is. I would also maybe say that is the modern version of a B-movie.
Yeah, I guess A24 movies are B-movies.
They're Blumhouse.
Yeah, this is a Blumhouse flick.
This is a Blumhouse flick. Because this is also the point in time, I think The Visit is when he starts doing the thing where, he mortgages his house and, puts all of his personal money into the movie, right?
Yes, he's always betting the farm on the movie, and he keeps winning.
Right, because he said that, I need to be scared while I'm making the movie so that I'm, leaving it all on the field.
You know what? It's been working for him.
Cool move, yeah, I can respect it.
And apparently he's also, the reason they were able to film in the zoo for this movie, even though they had a tiny budget,
yeah,
is because he's got good relationships with the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, basically all of his movies are shot in Philadelphia, aren't they?
He's, Philadelphia's greatest filmmaker.
Right, yeah. It's him and Sylvester Stallone.
Exactly.
Right. But yeah, Hedwig wants to kiss her, but doesn't know how to kiss so good because he's 9. And she's just very, understandably, just kind of she lets him do it because she's I need to, keep him on my side. But, you know, understandably, does not like being kissed by a 9-year-old in the body of, a 40-year-old.
Yeah.
And also starts, telling him things about herself to, show that, she's being open and honest with him and not trying to trick him again. So he takes her up to his bedroom.
What's in his bedroom, Luke?
Well, his bedroom is unfortunately just another weird part of this bunker. The window he talked about is just a crayon drawing.
He's got 2 crayon drawings, one with the window closed and one with it open.
What, did you think it was a real window so you could escape, etc.? We also get another cut to a third day of Dennis trying to convince the therapist that he's just sending those emails as a funny goof.
She's going on like, oh, trauma can cause suppressed personalities to take the light. And he's rolling his eyes like, come on, that would never happen.
Come on, it's just me, Barry, Doc, come on. But she eventually convinces Dennis that he can trust her enough to be honest with her. I understand why she is so, like, supplicating to Dennis at this point, because she's trying to, like, get at the heart of what's going on. But she knows that Dennis is a pedophile, and she knows that Dennis is lying about being around. I feel like she needs to, like, have more alarm bells raised at this point.
I think her alarm bells are fully raised. I think that she's aware that he's involved in the mysterious kidnappings that she saw on the news.
I guess that's true. She saw those on the news. Yeah, I guess she's just trying to, like, tease it out. Because she's also, she doesn't want to get this guy sent away to prison. She, like, has a lot of empathy for him and is trying to, like, work with him.
Even for Dennis, she has a lot of empathy.
Because even when she fully finds out what happened, like, her plan is to convince Dennis that he did a bad thing and not to, like, you know, run to the cops.
But at the same time, she's kind of one pushing this superhero theory. So in a way, isn't she kind of responsible for the Beast?
I think you could make the argument that she's the one that kind of like planted that idea in Kevin Crumb's head. Yeah. Because he's very much later like, no, your theories are true and I'm going to prove them by becoming the Beast.
And that's when she's like, well, I didn't really mean it.
At least not like this. I mean, to be fair, I don't think she wanted him to become a serial killer over it.
Yeah, but she also doesn't believe that someone could crawl on walls like some kind of Spider-Man.
Sure, I mean, she believes there's, like, well, obviously, yes, you can do all sorts of incredible things, but only, like, the kinds of incredible things that people can do. Like, the superpower is that you can multi-class, basically.
Right.
Not that you just get superpowers. I like, the one throwaway line that tries to justify the climbing of, like, you have the skill of, like, the world's greatest rock climber. Like, I don't think the world's greatest rock climber is doing the shit the Beast does at the end of this movie.
Unless he grows little hooks out of his fingers.
Honestly, I think the Beast would be more interesting if it did feel more like what Captain America is on paper, that he is just, like, all of the greatest talents of a person in one body, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of literally superhuman.
I mean, people have taken gunshots.
I don't think anyone's taken 2 shotgun shells to the stomach and continued walking around.
I bet there's some story of that happening.
I think even if you survive that, you're, like, down at that point. Or at least, once the adrenaline leaves you, you're down, you know?
Yeah, that's probably right.
Because it's not that he, takes the shot and keeps going. It's that the shot only hurts him so bad. Even, like, when he's, you know, back to being Dennis and Patricia and Hedwig later, he's like, oh yeah, the shot didn't go all the way through. Like, it didn't really hurt us that bad.
Must have been a weak shotgun.
He can't actually make his skin as hard as a rhinoceros, like they say.
Why not?
Because that ain't how skin work.
How do skin work?
Skin soft, Crystal.
Even rhinoceros?
Human skin, not rhinoceros skin.
What if could evolve?
That not how evolution go.
What if think really hard?
Still not how evolution go.
How do you explain it happening?
It's a work of fiction.
It's made up?
It's a made up story. Oh. But then again, aren't they all?
Aren't they all indeed? I love Hedwig's Kanye dance.
It's so fucking wild. It's very much what a 9-year-old might do, but it's scary in the body of a grown man.
Yeah.
But yeah, once Hedwig realizes that she was hoping to use his window to escape, he gets upset. He's like, I'm gonna go tell on you. And he stops her and, like, begs him to stay with her. She mentions, like, he said something about showing her something cool, please show her. And eventually he shows her that what he's got is a walkie-talkie that he stole from Dennis.
She wants to use this walkie-talkie to talk to someone outside.
Yeah, fuck this guy she gets in touch with.
Yeah, the guy she gets in touch with just keeps saying, like, is this a joke? Are you playing a joke on me?
She finally, again, there's lots of points in this movie where I'm like, just run, just hit him, just do whatever. This is exactly what she should be doing in this moment, and the guy on the other end is like, you're pranking me. You're not getting me that easy.
Look, it's almost as if people disclosing their trauma tend to be dismissed.
It is almost like that, yeah. Yeah, like, I'm not criticizing the movie for this. I'm just like, oh, come on! Fuck this dude!
It's very frustrating, just like she is frustrated. Like,
I can totally imagine this happening in real life. It just sucks.
Yeah.
Imagine what that guy must feel like once he knows... I assume he's one of the guys that she, like that help her at the end.
Yeah.
Can't be a good feeling to know you blew this teen girl off when she was screaming and begging for help.
Well, he'll know better for next time.
Hopefully.
I love how Dennis just watches her, doesn't try to take it, just watching her pleading to no effect, and eventually mercifully takes away the walkie-talkie.
Yeah, and just locks her back in the room. At this point, you're right, after the knife thing, yeah, Marsha's been taken away. At some point, I guess we glossed over it, we got the scene of the uncle, like, you know, when they're alone in the woods, the uncle molests her.
Yeah.
He, like, makes her get naked and, quote, pretend to be animals with him.
That's kind of what Kevin's doing.
Yeah. And then we get this flashback of her just, like, she grabbed a shotgun and she's got her uncle at gunpoint. And I really thought the way this was going is she was just going to shoot him. And, like, that was her trauma on top of, you know, the sexual assault. But, you know, he manages to get the gun away from her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, that is kind of her... flaw is not the right word, because I'm not trying to say it's like a failing on her part. But, you know, she freezes up in these situations, and that's, like, still what she's doing here.
Right, and even when she tries to act, her inaction is kind of validated, because it doesn't work.
Right. You know what? That's a connecting thread between this and Unbreakable. They both have a scene where a kid points a gun at an adult and they have to get it away from them. But it's, you know, very different context in both of them.
That's true. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
We'll have to watch out in Glass if there's another scene with a kid and a gun.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the doctor has gotten just like a billion emails now.
So she goes to his place of work.
And again, you know, gonna say, if you had time to send this many emails, you had time to sign them.
Yeah.
Jade, you're fucking this up. Yeah, I do like the scene that where, like, you know, Dennis kind of wakes up holding the phone, having sent the emails. He's like, ah, shit, fuck, goddammit.
So now, Karen's in the creepy basement, and she's...
Yeah, she's just, like, this is the first time we've seen outside, and they still, like, all the establishing shots outside are really tight, so you can't tell what the fuck this building is still.
Some kind of strange big building.
Yeah, yeah. And she kind of talks her way inside. You know, she says something about how, like, Dennis is exceptional. And, you know, he's just so, like, desperate for validation that, like, gets him. And, yeah, we get some line about, like, it sounds like maybe, like he's been institutionalized at some point. And he has a line that also makes it sound like there's a halfway house I could live at. But my bosses said I could live here once they, like, stop using this part of the buildings, and I like it better, so...
Yes, he likes being isolated from other people, because other people can't understand him.
Right, right. And, Dennis misunderstands the doctor and thinks that she will be on board with the Beast, so he kind of, like, starts to tip his hand more and more. And at this point, the doctor's like, I am in a basement with a murder man, I should get out of here.
I was so pissed at her that she doesn't believe in the Beast. This is your idea.
And also, like, even if you don't believe that it can be as, like, absurd as, you know, Dennis believes and as it turns out to be, surely the fact that, like, Dennis believes it and is trying to bring it out, like, should be a cause for concern for you. And I guess it is, and her, like, strategy is just to talk him out of it. People keep specking into charisma in this movie when they need to be specking into strength.
Well, the karate didn't work out either.
Well, that's because she didn't get enough levels in karate. If she leveled up the black belt job, you know, before this, it might have worked.
I think, isn't she a black belt?
She's not earning a black belt in 6 months, Crystal. I don't even think she's earning, like, a green belt in 6 months.
Well, it is understood that taking karate classes at a mall is not even being a real martial fighter.
Right, exactly. This whole movie, I did just keep thinking that, like, about the adventure game of it. And, like, honestly, I might like it better if it was just locked into Anya Taylor-Joy's POV the whole time. And we're just watching her slowly, like, we keep thinking, oh, she escaped. Oh, no, this facility's bigger than we thought it was. And, like, just unraveling it from that direction instead of going, like, from the inside out and the outside in at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Like, if this actually did just feel like a Zero Escape game, I think it might be a stronger movie.
Yeah. Karen finds Claire in a room, yeah. And she starts realizing it's real scary in here.
Right, and then, like, Dennis sees her seeing that and tries to, again, does the think you should leave bit of, like, listen, it's okay, she's not important, she doesn't matter, it's fine. And the doctor, like, tries to plead with Dennis that, like, this is wrong, and you know it's wrong, you can't do this, man, and he's like, I'm so sad that you feel that way, and then gasses her.
Meanwhile, both Marcia and Claire are trying to find a way out. They're, like, communicating through the wall, but they can't find nothing.
Well, Marcia finds a coat hanger and wants to try to use it to, like, undo the slide latch on the other side of the door. And, like, there's a lot of tension of her, like, working to do that.
She's just too sheltered to be able to do this.
Yeah, and again, I feel like this needs to be the point where, like, even if you accept that framing, they've been down here for, like, a week at this point. They are not sheltered anymore.
They're just trying to copy what they've seen on the movies and TV. They've never gone through it before.
Yeah, I don't like that they get killed.
I don't like that they don't get any further character development.
They get no character development, and yeah, like, eh. To me, the way this movie should obviously go is just that, like, they bond with Anya Taylor-Joy over now their shared trauma and, like, escape together.
Anya Taylor-Joy doesn't even really try to bond with them.
No, that's what I'm saying. She just, like, lays in bed and pouts and won't even explain to them, like, I'm not giving up, I'm being patient.
Right.
Because, to be fair, part of it, like, then, hey, this is where you can build their character conflict out. To an extent, that's true, but they could also call her out on not taking the opportunities that she is given, you know? Like, I thought you were just being patient for the right time. Why'd you fuck up when, like, the time came?
And there's kind of a fake out where we cut away from that into someone opening a door, but it turns out it's actually Anya Taylor-Joy opening the door.
Right, yeah.
She's the one that's smart enough to get out by picking a lock.
Yeah, but also, at this point, the Horde has, like, fully taken control, and they are out, like, headed to the train. There's a line earlier on about, like, you can only call the Beast from a train, because a train is, like, what Kevin's dad used to, like, leave him.
Yes, he places flowers at a train.
Right, because I believe, you know, you could maybe infer it here. I believe Glass confirms that the train he got on was Israel 177.
Yes, it's absolutely the same train.
Yeah.
So Elijah created another supervillain.
That's true.
He must be so proud.
He must be. But yeah, like, the scenes of the Horde, like, going to summon the Beast are being, like, intercut with both Marcia trying to get the slide latch open and Casey looking for an exit, but also ending up stuck in this room with a computer that has no internet connection, but vlogs from all the personalities.
Yes.
And this is where we get, like, a couple more of them. There's so many of them that I am not keeping their names straight, but, like, you know, one of the good guy ones is, like, a history buff that's, like, can only explain anything in terms of, like, analogies to history.
He goes on a very long screed about some kind of Islamic history.
Yeah, it seems like he's specifically into, like, Islamic history, yeah.
Just to conclude, his big conclusion is, I think we should fight the Horde.
Right. Yeah. We also get, like, the real Barry for the first time in this vlog, where he's like, I'm getting worried because I feel like I'm getting moments of lost time and someone is getting the light from me when I'm not giving it up freely. Maybe I should tell the doctor about it. I don't want to worry her.
Should have worried about it more.
Should have worried about it. All right, this is also where we get let only one of the personalities is diabetic.
Yes. How come I'm the only one that has to take these shots?
Right, and again, like, that's silly, but I like how it's played.
It's performed very well.
It is a very, like, believable human performance of the stupidest goddamn thing I've ever heard.
I would also be annoyed.
And it's like a very, like, it's annoyed, but it's this very, like, low-level human kind of annoyed.
Being human is basically about being low-level annoyed at various things.
Right, right. I was gonna say, too, Dennis, like, the way he dresses and, like, is framed, he's got, like, you know, the gray shirt and slacks and the glasses. He kind of looks like the middle evolution of a Pokemon line that ends with Dave Bautista and Knock at the Cabin.
You know what? You're absolutely right. He's the awkward middle evolution.
Right, he's the Charmeleon to Dave Bautista's Charizard.
But Dennis finally arrives inside the train, takes off his clothes, and the beast is summoned. He's crawling up the train. He's running good down the train tracks.
A police dog starts barking, and the cop's like, ah, it just reacts that way to animals. It's just a coyote or something. Call him back to the dog thing.
Yes.
Like, yeah, Claire is, like, trying to pep talk Marcia through the walls. Like, hey, everything's gonna be okay. You know, in a few hours, we're gonna be home on the couch. You know, relaxing. It's gonna be great. I like that Marcia never acknowledges this at all. I'm imagining in her mind, she's like, shut the fuck up, I am trying to concentrate.
No, I'm sure that she's keeping her calm.
I like to think that she's not. I think that's better.
Okay.
They're like, I'm not gonna bark at her, because, like, we are in this together, but that's... And I know she's trying to help, but this is not helping.
Yeah. As this happens, as Karen Dunn got bonked in the head, and she's crawling to the desk to try to write down Kevin's only weakness.
Right, it's established in one of the therapy sessions. When she's trying to get Dennis's trust, she's like, I know that if I say Kevin's full name, it will bring him out. But I also know that that's, like, kind of traumatic for all the rest of you. And, like, proof that you can trust me is the fact that I'm not doing that despite the fact that you're lying to me.
Yeah.
Should have done it.
It would have saved the lives of two young women.
Yeah, I guess maybe the argument for not doing it would be that, like, Kevin doesn't know where they are.
That's true.
But, you know when she should have said it is when she opened the door and saw Claire on the ground begging her for help.
She still thought she could do the speech check.
Yeah, instead of pleading to Dennis, she should have just Kevin'd his ass.
Right. She had, like, an 83% chance, Luke. Can you blame her?
Yeah, she's, like, struggling to write. She's still disoriented from the gassing. And then the beast comes in. We don't really ever see his full face because he's not a man anymore. He's an animal.
But you see his big, veiny chest.
Yes, yeah. And she is trying to say his name, but she's still, like, out it from the gas, and her, like, words are slurred, and she can't talk. And he, like, puts her in a bear hug, and she tries to stab him, but he's got the skin of a rhinoceros now, so the knife just breaks.
Also, she's wielding, like, a butter knife.
Yeah.
This is a horrific death.
Yeah, he just crushes her by bear hugging her. It's fucked up.
Does she deserve it, Luke?
No, I don't think so.
Some people interpret her as a villainous figure.
No, she's not a villain. I think she is misguided and, like, too trusting, but she's not a villain.
Did she put Kevin into a constricting box?
No, if anything, she's very, like, open and, like, you know, welcoming of the fact that he, you know, his brain doesn't work the way that most people's do.
I just read some Letterboxd reviews that cast her in a more negative light than I interpreted.
I might, like, judge her poorly, but I think her intentions are obviously very, like, good and altruistic.
Right.
I think her biggest sin is being, like, you know, too altruistic and too trusting and not acting quickly enough when she knows there's something wrong with this situation.
Right.
But even then, like, I understand why she does that, because she knows that, like, yeah... there's a couple people that are doing something bad, but I don't want to ruin the lives of, like, 20 other people trying to stop them.
That's right, she's looking out for everyone.
Right, right. But yeah, while watching the vlogs, Casey notices Barry grab a ring of keys from off of, like, his coat rack, and she, like, throws his clothes on the floor and finds the keys are still there, so now she can get out of here.
And as she's slowly walking through the hallways... She finds out her friends done got chopped.
Right, she finds Marcia and Claire. Like, the last time we saw them, it was just like, oh, she's working that lock, she might get it. And when Casey gets there, like, the door's unlocked, and she opens it, and Marcia's just there with, like, her guts hanging out of her tummy.
I bet that tastes good, though. For the beast.
Do you?
I hope it tastes good for the beast.
Oh, for the beast. Sure, okay.
It would suck so bad if after all this it was a disappointing meal.
Uh-huh, yeah. And then she checks the next room and the beast is still feeding on Claire. So Casey just like runs back out and locks the door. So he's trapped. She can get out. He's locked in.
Oh, but he's so strong. He can simply push the door open anyway.
Ah, shit. And there's so many keys in this key ring. How's she going to find the right one in time?
But eventually she finds the scrap of paper that Karen wrote on and says, yeah. Say his name, Kevin Wendell Crumb.
Right. So she says it, and the beast immediately just starts, like, freaking out. Every time she says it, it's like he's hit with an energy blast.
Now, for the whole rock climber excuse, I guess he is Spider-Manning on this, like, wall with lots of indents and pores that maybe a rock climber could hang onto.
I'd love to see that in real life. I'd be very impressed. I have a hard time believing that that's actually doable.
I mean, how'd they do it for the flick?
I would guess, like, wires or something.
Yeah, maybe. Or he's on the floor.
Or just CG. No, he is wired up. Look at the way he moves on this wall.
Wouldn't he just be on the floor?
Oh, that could be too, yeah. But, like, the way he's moving, he does not look like a climber. He's, like, sliding up the wall too much.
Yeah. But she says his name, and he flashes back to his abusive mother.
Right, the reason this works is because his mother used to always say, Kevin Wendell Crumb, you made a mess, before, like, dragging him out of a hiding place and beating him. So, like, you get, you know, again, you get the doctor's, like, reticence to use this method because, like, it's a traumatic, she has to trigger a traumatic flashback in him to get this to stop.
Yes.
But that is what brings Kevin to the forefront. This movie came out in 2018, right?
2016.
Oh, it's 2016? Okay. Yeah, so he has been, like, Kevin isn't aware when the other personalities are in control. He's like, it's still 2014, right? And, Casey has to be like, no, it's not. And he just kind of pieces together that he's done some awful things. He sees the dead doctor on the floor, and he tells her where he's got a shotgun and just wants her to kill him.
This is so tragic.
Yeah. But before she can even, like, she starts to move for the shotgun, but then another personality takes over. Like, hey, no, hold on. I think this is Jade, right?
Yes.
He's like, listen, don't listen to Kevin. He's, like, a very, like, broken man. He can't handle being out in the world like that. Most of us are fine. Please don't kill us. And, like, this is the scene where, like, he just cycles through a bunch of them rapidly, but unfortunately the one he lands on is, I forget if it's Patricia or Dennis, but one of the ones that wants to call the beast back out.
Yes.
And now that they've done the ritual once, they can just sort of do it at will.
Right. Now the beast is coming back. Casey's got the shotgun. He's running through the hallways trying to find something.
Yep. Well, he's, like, knocking out the lights individually so that she can't spot him to shoot him good.
Yes.
I do, like, you know, when the doctor was, like, worried and trying to get away, she, like, stuffs a handkerchief into the door jamb, and, like, that is what lets Casey escape the beast here.
Yes.
But yeah, she has to, like, run, because he's got the shotgun shells in his locker, even though the shotgun's in here. Yeah, and she's, like, running down a hall, he's knocking out the lights, like we said. And she starts taking shots, but he's far away, it's dark, she can't get a good shot on him. There's, like, a cage back here, she locks herself in. And we get, like, her last flashback, which is that her dad died of a heart attack, and her uncle is, like, her guardian now. So she's, like, even more, like, she was trapped before she ever got kidnapped.
She's in a social cage.
Right.
The beast starts monologuing about how the unburned, the unslain, they are asleep, and they must be sacrificed.
Yeah. Why does she take her shirt off here? Is it just because it's ripped and it's, like, getting in her way?
I think so.
But yeah, she finally takes off her last shirt, and she's covered in scars, presumably given to her by her uncle, and the beast realizes, oh, you're like me. You're not, you are awake. You're cool. Well, I'm not gonna kill you. All right, see ya. Bye.
And he just leaves.
Yeah, like she shoots him twice as he's approaching, but it doesn't stop him. She can't stop him. He just decides, you know, to spare her.
And she's just in this cage until someone eventually comes down and finds her.
Yeah, and then she just kind of gets escorted out. And, you know, the cops finally get called. the news is everywhere. And there's, like, it's such a gut punch. She's, like, sitting in the back of the car, and then the cop comes, like, hey, your uncle's here to take you home. It's like, oh.
That's the best scene in the movie.
No, it's great, because then she just has that silent moment of, like, just staring at the cop. It's like, is she gonna say something? And she doesn't. She just gets out and goes to, you know, let her uncle get her.
She got, like, out of the fire, only to go back to the usual fire.
Right, yeah. Like, nothing is... The horror has not stopped for her.
No.
It started before this movie started, and it's gonna continue past the end of this movie. And, yeah, then we get the ending title card, followed by the Marvel teaser trailer. Or the Marvel, like, post-credits type scene.
Yes, the horror talks to each other through the mirror, saying, the Beast is real, we did it, the Beast is super-powered, everyone's gonna believe us now.
Yeah. Smash cut to the news, being like, some people are saying this guy is super-powered, that's obviously wrong, but something weird happened.
They're calling him The Horde. Ah, it's a funny name, kind of like that one guy 16 years ago.
Reminds me of that time 15 years ago, there was that guy, they gave him a funny name too, what was it? And then Bruce Willis at the end of the counters goes, they called him Mr. Glass.
They must have been whooping in the theater at this one.
Because of the kids!
Because of the kids.
Yeah, I think this is a really well-constructed film. It's exciting to watch, but boy, like... You pick at it with your fingernail, and it's just all bad underneath the surface.
Some people seem to really connect with the message about trauma.
I think there are readings you can make of the message about trauma that I can appreciate. And again, my understanding is Glass kind of encourages you to favor those types of readings. But on its surface, I think what this movie says kind of sucks really bad.
What are the good readings?
Just the idea that, yeah, trauma is something that, like, you know, does sort of... Basically, that trauma doesn't have to mean that, like, you're a broken person, right? That, like, you can, like, grow from trauma and it can, like, you know... It can be empowering in a way. It's a way to, like, take ownership of bad experiences, right?
Like Cyborg, he's not broken and he's not alone.
Right, right. And I think Glass, and again, you know, we'll talk about this more when we actually watch Glass. My understanding is Glass is very much like so many superhero story, origin stories are rooted in traumatic experiences because they are a way for us to process trauma and, like, find meaning in traumatic things that happen to us.
People do like to find meaning in traumatic things that happen to them in the movies.
I think people try to do that in real life, too. It you know, why did this happen to me is a pretty common, like, thing that people think and have to grapple with.
Yes, it is something they grapple with enough that they also make art about it.
Right, yeah, yeah. And this movie, I think, on its own, doesn't quite get there because I think it's too rooted in the idea, like, no, trauma just makes you better than other people, actually. It's very much the thing of, like, you know, oh, all the best artists have suicidal depression, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing for M. Night Shyamalan to be making a movie about, because I feel like that's not his vibe at all. He seems like just sort of a pretty, like, basic dude.
Yeah, every time I've seen him, he seems extremely normal.
He seems friendly and well-adjusted. He seems like the kind of guy the Beast would rip in half, like a phone book.
But, you know, maybe he does believe that the Beast would kill him.
Right.
Because he has such admiration for traumatized people.
Well, it's also, right, because that message is what the villain is saying, but there's not really a rejoinder to it at all, you know?
No, he could tell by sight that the other two girls were asleep and he was correct.
I guess, like, there is a line about how he'd been stalking them for a long time to make sure they were the right kind of victims. It wasn't just he took one look at them and knew they were, like, you know, impure.
But we as the audience are supposed to clock them as, you know, spoiled rich girls.
Right, this is victim mentality. We can't give into it. It's like, no, victim mentality is actually what gives you your superpowers.
Right. I don't know. I feel like Halloween 2 yeah. by Rob Zombie is a better version of this.
I have never seen a Halloween film.
I think you might like Robert Zombie's Halloween.
I'd be willing to give it a try. I would also watch John Carpenter's Halloween.
I've never seen that one before.
I hear it's good.
Maybe. I've had bad luck with Carpenter movies. I saw The Thing, saw Big Trouble in Little China, saw Escape from New York. They're kind of mid.
I agree Big Trouble in Little China is kind of mid. I think you're crazy for thinking that about The Thing. I think that movie's, like, incredible.
It's all right.
Let's see, I've seen The Thing, I've seen In the Mouth of Madness, and I've seen Christine. I think those are the only Carpenters I've seen. Well, I watched like half of Big Trouble in Little China, and my wife was not into it, and I wasn't into it enough to like press on when she wasn't feeling it.
You know what feels so fucking good is turning off a movie halfway through. You just the power that wells up inside you when you decide, I don't have to watch this anymore.
I've been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I got to the last boss in that game, which is this, like, super long, you know, JRPG extravaganza. I think there's literally 8 phases to it, with, like, multiple cutscenes in between them.
That's too much.
And, like, halfway through it, it keeps, like, throwing you random party members for each scene. Like, not literally random, but it's just, like, this part, Yuffie, Barret, and Tifa have to fight. And this part, it's Kate Sith, Cloud, and Red 13, or whatever. And I got to a part like halfway through it after playing it for an hour straight where the 3 they gave me had no healing powers and I had run out of healing items. And the gimmick of that part was that the boss hits you with a super strong, unblockable, like, AoE attack. And you have to, you know, heal up before it keeps hitting you. Like, well, I'm not equipped to handle this. I can't do it because you took all my healers away. I'm not playing that hour of boss fight that I already went through again. I'm turning this game off and watching the ending on YouTube.
I'm proud of you for doing that. The mistake would have been to keep playing.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's not even like, well, it's not a skill issue. It's just, I should have just slapped one more healing materia on a guy first.
Right.
And then it would have been trivial.
An hour-long boss fight. What are we doing?
An hour-long boss fight that I didn't finish.
What are we doing?
I think it probably would have been like, I think it might have been another 30 minutes after that.
It seems like they made the game that everyone wanted. And turns out that game is too much.
I was having a lot of fun with that game as I was playing it. And partially because I think the ending is very, very bad. But I am just souring on it more and more the longer it sits with me.
Yeah? Not excited for Remake 3?
I'm honestly not. I'm at the point where, like, do I even bother with Remake 3?
I'll be excited because then they can finally make a new video game.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VI Remake.
No! Make Final Fantasy 18.
They gotta make 17 first.
I'm sure 17's in production already.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you look at how people responded to 16 versus how they respond to 7 Rebirth, if I was at Square Enix, I might be like, no, people, let's just keep remaking the ones people like. That works out better.
What if they made, like, a Nintendo Switch game?
That'd rock. Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. I mean, that people were really excited a couple years ago, or even a year or two ago, when Square Enix was making all those, like, really small RPGs that, like, they barely advertised, but had, like, a lot of interesting, like, game design in them, like dungeon encounters and stuff, you know? And then I think they came out and said they're gonna not do that anymore.
They haven't even made Dragon Quest III Remake.
Yeah, which is just, like, a graphic overhaul. Like, I know it's all in 3D, like, it's not trivial work, but, like, it's not 7 Remake.
No.
And for some reason, that seems to be dead on the runway.
Luke.
Yeah.
How good is Split?
How good is Split? Again, I'm split on Split. It's hard to come down strongly on it. Because again, the problem I have is that I think all of the thriller filmmaking of it is really strong, but the longer the movie goes, the more it gets into dialogue and monologues about, like, what it's saying, and I don't like what it's saying.
No.
So, like, the action that I do like starts to kind of take a back seat in, like, that, like, back half. My gut is somewhere in the C plus B minus range. I'm leaning more B minus. I had fun watching the movie.
Interesting. I'm gonna give it a straight C.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see how it compares to previous movies.
Yeah, maybe that'll lock me in more. It's not as good as Unbreakable.
No, it's not as good as Unbreakable. What did I give Unbreakable? I gave it a B plus.
People can look at what we've given movies at bit.ly/MarvelGPA.
That's right, bit.ly/MarvelGPA. Now, a B minus is the same score you gave to Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Golly. Yeah, I guess that sounds about right.
Yeah. A B minus also the same score given to Captain America, the First Avenger.
Anytime you start getting into this, I'm like, well, the idea of rating movies is just ridiculous because...
Okay,
like...
I'll read some of mine. C, that's about as good as The Incredible Hulk. That's about as good as okay. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I would say this is better than both of those.
I
don't say Ant-Man and the Wasp is better than The Incredible Hulk.
Yes, I would say Split is better than both of those, but they're in the same tier.
Okay, okay.
You gave a C to Ant-Man.
Okay, yeah.
Is that about as good as Split or worse?
It's Ant-Man's worse than Split.
Is Split better than The Avengers?
No.
Okay. Is it better than Thor?
I feel like I am alone out here in thinking that Thor is one of the best movies that Marvel's made. Not because it's an incredible film, but just because it's, like, basically competent.
Yeah, it has, like, an arc for the characters. There's some right. acting.
I feel like anytime I share that opinion with anyone, they're like, what the fuck? That movie sucks. I'm like,
no, I agree with you.
Okay, I'm glad.
You know, the final fight, it's not just against a bunch of dogs. It's like, represents his change in character.
He puts the hammer on Loki.
Exactly, and Loki can't lift it because he's not worthy.
Exactly.
That's exactly what you cast the spell for.
Right.
This movie's about as good as The Matrix Revolutions. I think that's right.
I think I have more affection for The Matrix Revolutions, but, you know, if I watched it for the first time today, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know.
You like that Neo doesn't know who Bane is.
Right. Yeah, no, there's a lot of bad parts of Revolutions, that's true. When I think of it now, I just think of, like, I'll be honest, I just think of the cool shots of all the Smiths in the rain.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mobile Avenue. But there's a lot of other parts of that movie that aren't
you,
as good.
You like the Train Man.
I love the Train Man, he rocks.
His Powerade ads.
Yeah, I guess it's on par with The Matrix Revolutions overall.
But it's not as good as The Matrix Reloaded.
No, no.
No, what could be?
Several things. I only gave it a B.
It's about as good as Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Did I give Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark a B?
You gave it a C.
Okay. Even that feels generous.
It's not as good as Spider-Man 3.
B plus to Spider-Man 3, huh?
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to relitigate it, but that movie's not sitting at a B plus in my mind.
It's mostly a good movie until the last 20 minutes.
I think my issue is that it cracks the lid on, like, suddenly having, like, a domestic abuse plotline that it does nothing with.
Right, the last 20 minutes.
No, that starts, like, in the fucking, when he, you know, jazz dances at Mary Jane and, like, slaps her.
Right, and that's when he knows he has to give up the Venom.
I just think that is a spicy meatball to cook up if you're not going anywhere with it.
Yeah, you're right. This movie's way better than Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's not impressive. That movie sucks ass.
It's not as good as Venom. One of your A-plus films.
Again, I'm putting my days of changing my grades behind me. I don't know if Venom has stayed at an A-plus over the years. There's some A-plus sequences in it, but overall...
The lobsters
are incredible.
The chicken nuggets.
He does eat that whole frozen
The
She-Venom
kiss.
Here's the problem. You are getting close to exhausting all the good parts of that movie.
Like a turd in the wind.
Do you remember who the villain of that movie is?
Yeah, he's a spaceman. He's like Elon Musk.
Okay, fair enough. I thought I could get you with that.
Yeah, and then the bad Venom wants to take him over.
Oh god, what's the bad Venom's name in that movie? It's not Carnage,
Arsenal?
That's the second one. Don't remember.
Arsenal gear?
It's like mayhem.
Might be something like mayhem.
Villainy? I don't know.
Icky.
Oh, it's riot.
Riot. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Luke, what movie are we talking about next?
Well, next we're going to have to round out the Easterial 177 trilogy with Glass.
You're excited for that one.
I'm excited for that one. Again, everything I've heard about it, I remember the trailers for it that are just, like, the three, you know, Mr. Glass, Bruce Willis, and James McAvoy just sitting in, like, a psych ward while a therapist, like, monologues at them about how superheroes are stupid. That sounds like a movie I'd like.
That one has the most mixed reception, which makes me very interested in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all the movies that people don't like are the ones like, this is the best one.
Right, right. So you have not seen Glass yet?
I have not seen Glass yet.
Even though you've really been going deep on Shyamalan.
Yes, I've watched all the canonically bad ones, I believe. I've seen Lady in the Water, The Happening, Last Airbender, After Earth. I think those are the canonically bad ones.
I'd say so. Yeah, I think Village is one people are a little mixed on.
Village has seemed to be reappraised over time.
Yeah, I think people like Village more now than they did at the time.
But all the four bad ones, they're actually pretty good.
I forget if we've talked about this on here. You know what I've always thought was fucking stupid is people complaining that the twist in Signs makes no sense, that, like, the aliens are weak to water.
Yeah, that's one of the progenitors of cinema sins, which has always been foolish.
What's wrong with that? That's just the same twist as War of the Worlds. It's the same exact twist.
What would they want? They have to invent, like, a fucking Tony Stark gun to fight them?
Right? Yeah. Like, I guess the argument is, well, why would they invade a planet that's 70% the thing they're weak to? But, like, no. Maybe they didn't know they were weak to it. Maybe they're from a planet with no water on it.
Humans are also weak to water. The ocean is really dangerous.
Yes, but I mean, we don't melt like the Wicked Witch of the West when it hits us.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, they are rock type, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't think that, like, again, why do the aliens in War of the Worlds fucking invade a planet with germs on it?
All planets have water and germs.
I don't think that's true. I think, in fact, it's very important, like, an important fact about space is most planets don't have germs on them.
What if all the other ones are just out of sight?
We've got the only seven?
Yes. Luke, you want to hear a split joke?
Sure, give me a split joke.
This comes in from upjoke.com/split-jokes. My girlfriend said, "You act like a detective too much. I want to split up." "Good idea," I replied. "We can cover more ground that way."
Okay, yeah, all right. I'll give him that
one. You want a better one?
No, I kind of like that one.
Okay, can I do the other one, though? I feel like it's better.
Sure.
How do you split Rome in half?
How?
You use a pair of Caesars.
All right.
You don't like that one?
Let's get out of here.
Goodbye.